The following program is intended for an audience that is blind or print impaired. I'm Kurt Benrud. Welcome to Science Fiction Shorts, brought to you by a team of volunteer readers. Our program will be available in podcast after the initial broadcast.
This is Scott Youngkin reading Love is Orange, Love is Red by Eric James Stone. You don't say, I love you anymore. Neither do I. We had only been dating 2 months the first time you told me you loved me. I love you too, I said. Of course, that was long before the empathy virus, so you hugged me tighter and I believed. You love me with a waterfall of emotion, churning bright white in the sunlight as it roars down from a dizzying height, scattering rainbows everywhere. Maybe things would be different if you had come down with the virus first. I woke up feeling better after a good dose of NyQuil the night before, and I marveled as I lay in bed beside you, feeling for the first time the powerful emotion surging inside you, awed that anyone could feel so much for me. I told you how wonderful that was. I love you with a deep blue river of emotion, slow and steady as it flows gently to the sea. The morning after you got sick, you woke up and looked into my heart, expecting to find a waterfall, the mirror image of what you felt for me, and it wasn't there. You don't say I love you because it hurts to hear a reply you can't believe. I don't say I love you because it hurts you when I do, and it hurts me to hurt you. On one of our early dates, we got to talking about colors. They're all in our head, you said, just perception. But there's no way to know that the color red in your mind is the same as the color red in my mind. It might be what I see as orange, or even green, or blue. I shook my head. Red is red. Orange is orange. How can they be different for different people? I hope one day you'll understand. I was wrong about colors.
Next up is a science fiction short story that the author has adapted into a radio play. Jennifer Green reads the stage directions, Robbie Merritt reads the part of Barry, and I read the part of Mark. And once again, my name is Kurt Benrud.
A Visit from the Past, a play in one act by Michael James Sleffler. Cast of characters: Mark, 24-year-old man. Barry, 44-year-old man. Setting: we are in the living room of Barry's home. There is a couch facing the audience with a coffee table in front of it. The year is 2035. The couch faces where the TV is located. Barry is sitting on the couch holding his phone, contemplating what he is about to do.
Okay. I'm ready for this, right? Right.
Barry presses a button on the phone and then places it on the table. Mark walks onto the stage. Mark looks around. He looks confused, as if he does not know where he is. He addresses Barry, who stands up when he sees Mark looking at him.
Where am I? How did I get here?
It's okay. You're okay. Please, try to remain calm.
What happened?
Mark touches his head to make sure it is not damaged.
Have I been hurt? Was I drugged?
No, nothing like that. Really, you are fine.
Then what's going on?
Okay, this will be a little difficult to comprehend, but I have pulled you forward in time.
Mark stares at Barry for a moment before he replies sarcastically.
Yeah, right.
Mark looks around the room while standing in place and finally points at the cell phone on the table.
What is that?
It's a phone. Well, actually, it's a mobile computer that can connect to other computers from pretty much anywhere. But you can also use it to make calls, so people call it a phone.
Mark stares at the phone for a moment.
Oh, you mean a computer as in an electronic game? And they put it in a wireless phone? That's weird. But I guess that a phone without a cord would be convenient to use, like, around the house.
Well, not just in the house. I can go anywhere in the world and use it. Well, most places. I mean, it won't work in the largest wilderness areas or in the middle of the ocean.
Mark looks confused and then looks around the room some more. His eyes settle on the TV. He points toward it.
But that's a TV, right?
Yes. That's an 80-inch flat-screen TV. It has a computer built into it as well, so that I can do other things with it as well as watch movies.
By flat-screen, you mean...
Yes, yes. It's only about an inch thick. It weighs maybe 30 pounds. It's a lot better than your old cathode ray tubes.
So I really am in the future?
Yes. You came from 1988, but you are now in 2035.
What am I doing here? Will I be able to go back?
Why don't you come over here and have a seat? Then we'll talk about it.
Mark shrugs and then walks to the couch and sits down. Barry sits down as well.
I guess that I should introduce myself at this point. My name is Barry. It's nice to meet you. About 10 years ago, it was revealed that a company doing research into time travel for the military had made a breakthrough. They were able to see into the past, but not actually go there. This ended up causing many historical accounts to be rewritten and made it pretty much impossible to get away with a crime. The whole system was very complicated and expensive, of course, but with time and commercialization, it got easier to use and cheaper.
But you are not looking back in time.
No. The system that I am using is able to analyze a person's brain from the past and create a simulation.
Are you saying that I'm not real? That I'm a computer program?
Yes. This system, using projectors on the walls and ceiling, has recreated you.
So I'm just a hologram. But I can feel the couch.
It's more involved than just a hologram. The environment of the room is added into the simulation for you. Try to pick up the phone.
Mark puts his hand around the phone, which is on the table, but cannot pick it up.
You can't move it. It's like it's bolted to the table, and the table's bolted to the floor. Wow. This is a lot to take in. Hey, I can remember what I was doing right before I got here. If this simulation just thinks that it is me, why are the memories so complete?
It doesn't just think like you do. It's a duplicate of exactly how your brain was functioning and what was stored in it at that time. It takes a while for the copy to be made, but the system can look back in time at a particular moment and analyze every minute detail of someone's brain.
So you can choose exactly when to copy someone from?
Yes. A lot of people have these systems and spend time with people from the past. I've grabbed Stan Lee at different ages and had him watch various Marvel movies from the last couple of decades with me. It's interesting to see the differences in his opinions at various points in his career.
Who is Stanley?
Not Stanley. Stan Lee. Although actually his birth name was Stanley. He was a very famous comic book writer. But when he started, he changed his name so that he didn't embarrass his parents doing that kind of work.
Oh, I don't really read comic books much.
He worked on Spider-Man, X-Men, The Avengers, and many others.
Ah, yeah. I've seen some of those comics, but I never noticed who wrote them.
Well, I've also had conversations with Einstein, Edison, and a bunch of other famous people as well.
Cool.
I must say, you are taking this better than anyone else that I've had visit. Usually there's a lot of disbelief, worrying, and arguing for a while. Now, pre-electronics people are the worst. They often start yelling about demons or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty adaptable. I was a computer science major, so I can see how things could lead to here. Partially, at least. But I guess that you knew that. So, I become famous for something, right? That's why I'm here. So that you can see how I am before I do whatever it is that I'm going to do. Right?
Well, not exactly.
What? Wait. I don't do something bad instead, do I? Why did you bring me here?
I'll tell you in a minute. But first, will you answer a few questions for me?
All right. I'll pay my dues first. Shoot. I'll tell you the truth to any question. I've got nothing to hide.
Okay, thanks. All right, to start with, do you believe in love?
Mark looks at Barry askew for a moment and then shrugs.
I don't believe in it. I know that it exists. I've been in love a couple of times.
Okay, good. Those must have given you a lot of fond memories.
No, they didn't give me love back.
So you haven't been in a relationship?
I've dated some. Dated one girl in high school for a while. I think that she loved me, but I just didn't feel the same way.
But you kept dating her anyway?
Hey, I wasn't taking advantage of the situation or anything. I went out with her for a while to see if my feelings would grow for her, but after a short time, it became clear that things were going to stay one-sided, so I broke up with her. Didn't want to string her along if there was no future in it. I wanted her to have every chance to find someone that would return her love. I knew what it's like to have unrequited love, and I didn't want to perpetuate that.
So you found various women over time that you might be interested in, and dated them for a while to see if it would work out?
Not exactly. I'm not good at picking up women. Any time that I was interested in someone, I was either too shy or just too incompetent to get her to go out with me. All of the girls and women that I've dated hit on me.
So you did better with women that approached you first instead. Any idea why?
Well, takes pressure off when I know that they are interested in me. Since they were already interested, they are more forgiving of my awkwardness, I guess.
Okay, so are you dating anyone now?
No. It's been over a year since I went out with anyone.
Mark looks off in the distance, thinking for a moment.
I've actually been kind of... Never mind.
No, please. Go ahead and tell me what you were going to say.
Fine. I've kind of gotten to the point where I would consider trying extra hard with the next woman that likes me, even if I don't feel a connection. I mean, I've been out of college for a while now, and I just don't have as many chances to meet people as I used to. I guess you could say that I'm getting desperate.
So you may be at the point where you would consider a long-term relationship, maybe even marriage, with someone that you don't love?
I don't know about marriage. Maybe. I'm lonely. I've been lonely for a long time. I've ended all of the relationships that I have had fairly quickly. Maybe love would grow, given time.
What about kids?
Whoa! Are you trying to get me set up with someone? Marriage and kids?
Will you answer the question?
Fine. I don't want kids. I don't get along with them. Even when I was growing up, I got along better with grown-ups than kids.
So if you did get married, you wouldn't have kids?
No, definitely not. I hate kids. So does that mean you don't have someone for me to meet after all?
Oh, you did meet her. Or you will meet her tomorrow.
Oh, cool. So, do we discover something together?
What?
The thing that makes me famous.
You are not famous.
Oh. So then why did you bring me here?
The woman that you meet tomorrow is my mother.
Oh. Then...
Yes, you are my father.
Crap. Well then, I guess I must have changed my mind about kids.
I don't think so.
So we don't get along?
I've only known you in this form.
So I'm...
Dead. You killed yourself.
Why?
I didn't know until now. This is the youngest you that I've talked to. I've been pulling you here from further and further back over the last 3 years of your life.
Wait. You don't think that I killed myself because of you, do you?
Yes. Well, partially at least. I didn't know the whole picture before, just bits and pieces. I think that you killed yourself because I was born. And in addition to hating kids, you felt that my birth trapped you into staying with my mother.
I'm sorry. You have to realize it wasn't really you. You were not to blame. It had to have been me. I apparently gave up and settled for something less than what I wanted, I must have not been able to live with my decision.
Barry looks off in the distance, thinking for a moment.
Yes, I understand that now.
I don't know if this helps or not, but I like you. You seem like a fine person.
Thanks. You seem nice, too, but broken.
I am broken. Unrequited love can break anyone. I'm sorry.
Me too. I've avoided relationships all of my life because of what you did. But after all of these years, I've somehow managed to find someone who I love anyway, and she loves me in return. But before I could ask her to marry me, I needed to find out why you did what you did.
Glad that you found someone. I'm sure that you will be happy.
We will be. Goodbye, Dad.
Goodbye, son.
Barry picks up the phone and presses a button on it. Blackout.
This is Scott Youngkin reading The Matchmaker by Sarah Poles. Don had been delivering mail to Ruthetta Bell's house for almost 30 years before she finally asked him inside. It was the day he'd been waiting for, but never had the courage to make happen. Now, though, it wasn't like he imagined. He'd waited too long. Ruthetta received a lot of mail, more than anyone else on Don's route, more than Don had received in his whole life, probably. She received parcels and envelopes and bundles and gift boxes. They came every day in all shapes and colors and sizes. Don wasn't the nosy type, but from time to time, Ruthetta offered him a glimpse into her world. Once, he heard croaking sounds coming from a little box with small circular holes in the sides. Ruthetta winked as he handed her the strange package. "Oh, don't worry," she said. "It's just Prince Charming the Frog. He's fine. Travels by mail all the time. Easiest way as a prince." And then after a time she winked again. But shh! Another time, maybe 3 years later, a shoebox-sized package suddenly became very warm as Don approached Ruthetta's door. Just as she stepped outside, the box became so hot that Don fumbled it and it fell to the ground. He expected Ruthetta to be angry. Like all her packages, the box said, "Fragile," in big, bold letters. What if he'd ruined some expensive china or a mail-order mirror? But Ruthetta just laughed and shook her head. Then she picked up the box, gave it a little tap, and said something in a language Don did not understand. "Now, I shouldn't be telling you this, Don," she began, "but right in here is a djinn. What? A genie. I kid you not. He's just a little cranky due to the long trip, you see. But he meant you no harm, I promise." "What do you want with a genie? Or what's he want with you?" Don asked. Ruthetta just smiled and shrugged. Don figured she was a sorceress of some sort, though he knew it wasn't his business. Occasionally, Don also thought Ruthetta might possibly be a little crazy, a little off. His own mother had been a little off. In her later years, she started talking to Don's dad, her husband. Problem was, he'd already been dead for 20-odd years. But then one day, Don saw Little Red Riding Hood sneaking out Ruthetta's side door, hand in hand with an attractive young lady. The pair was quite clearly madly in love. Ruthetta wasn't crazy, she was a sorceress. Don just knew it. On Ruthetta's 58th birthday, Don dared to bring her a cupcake from the diner down the way. "Oh, thank you, my dear," she exclaimed when Don handed her the cupcake. Adrenaline made Don's heart and head pound. She'd never before called him dear. Ruthetta gobbled the cupcake right up as they talked about this and that and the unseasonably warm March weather. Strangely, though, Don didn't have any mail, packages, or envelopes or otherwise for Ruthetta that day. It was the first time in over 10 years that he hadn't brought her some sort of parcel. "No mail today," he noted as she licked her fingers clean. "Mighty unusual." Ruthetta nodded, suddenly solemn. "Well, I should be going inside now." She gathered her pale purple robe at the hem. But thank you again for the cupcake. With that, she closed the door. Crushed, Don descended the steps. Just as he rounded the mail car, he stopped. He thought he heard Ruthetta crying. Then again, it could have been the wind or a stray cat, or perhaps it was one of those fanciful friends that she hid behind those walls. Whatever it was, he hoped it wasn't her. She deserved to be happy, to be loved. Don never did learn if Ruthetta had been crying that day. What he did know was that her steady flow of packages began to slow to an irregular drip. On good weeks, she received 2, maybe 3 boxes and just a handful of letters. The bad weeks brought just 1 parcel or none at all. Still, wearing a smile on his face and hiding his love in his heart, Don visited Ruthetta every day of the week, Saturdays too. As the years passed and the deliveries slowed and slowed some more, Ruthetta stopped talking about her endeavors and mysterious friends. Mostly, she just discussed the weather. She never mentioned the drop-off in packages, and neither did Don. Once during the slow time, Don thought he saw Goldilocks running through Ruthetta's garden with a gorgeous peacock in tow. But he didn't get a close enough look to be sure. She could have been a Girl Scout, or just a girl from next door. Then the envelopes and packages stopped coming altogether. When this happened, Don came bearing only the weekly coupon books sent out by the strip malls and fast food joints. "I still have my coupons," she joked every week. "At least someone still knows I exist." "I know you exist," Don wanted to say, but he never did. He was old now, with a pot belly and jowls. He wasn't her type anyway. She was eclectic. And smart. Funny, too. He was just the mailman. Finally, as Don feared, he no longer had even the coupon books to deliver to his dear friend Ruthetta. Like the morning dew on a hot August day, they disappeared quickly and didn't return. It was sometime during her 3rd couponless week that Ruthetta invited Don inside. As always, Ruthetta had on a pale purple robe. It was dirty and torn at one shoulder. "Sit, sit," Ruthetta said softly, pointing to her couch. "I'll bring some coffee." Don sat. The room was filled with trinkets and knick-knacks and impressive souvenirs, old lamps and tea boxes, picnic baskets and hair ribbons, even a tiny golden crown. As he looked at them, the past 30 years flashed before his eyes. The holidays they didn't share, the children they didn't have, the memories they didn't make, all of it. "So you're a sorceress?" Don asked when she came back with the coffee. He'd phrased it as a question, so as not to sound presumptuous, but in truth it was more of a comment. "Oh, no, honey, I'm a matchmaker for the fairy creatures." "Fairy creatures?" "You know, the creatures that exist because we believe in them, because we talk about them and write about them and dream about them. Those are fairy creatures, and they need love, too." "I didn't know," Don said. "Well, I know you've seen a few of them hanging around here." She winked and laughed as she said this. Don's heart fluttered. It had been a long time since he'd seen her look happy. "I suppose I have," he chuckled. He thought back to the frog, Prince Charming, and Little Red. "Well, if they die without love, without knowing someone cares for them, they'll be lost forever, forgotten. And that's no way to let a fairy creature go after all they've done for us, you know. They deserve to be loved, to live on in our hearts." "I never thought of it like that," Don said. "But it makes sense, I suppose." "They come, we meet, and I match them up with a human companion, or sometimes a gentle animal. And it isn't always a romantic relationship, you understand. Sometimes it's just a matter of having a friend who cares." "Sounds like a lot of work," Don said, "but important." "It isn't easy, I'll admit," she replied. "These creatures are quite particular, see, because we've built them up to be just so. But, and now I don't mean to boast, I do have a 98% success rate."
"Success rate?"
98% of the fairy creatures I match up remain alive in our hearts and minds after they die. They aren't forgotten." "That's impressive," Don said, and he meant it, too. "But why do they come to you in the mail?" "We have to be discreet, you know. All fairy creatures have enemies. wolves and wicked stepmothers, Cruellas and quarrelsome queens, even Rumpelstiltskins. And let me tell you, the Rumpelstiltskin types are just awful. So I like to take extra precautions to keep the furry creatures safe. Safe as can be. Don nodded. Seems the furry creatures have forgotten about me now, though, Ruthetta added after a while. Her tone had become sullen, her voice barely above a whisper. I guess they found out about online dating services and all that baloney. All I ask for is a little fruitcake or a new bathrobe, you know. Maybe a little spare change. Ruthetta bit her lip as if fighting off tears. It's been years since I've had a new bathrobe. Don, too, fought back tears. Who needs 'em? He declared, trying to sound more confident than he felt. Ruthetta's weak smile told him everything. She needed them. She needed their letters and their packages, their love. I'm tired, Don, Ruthetta said, setting her coffee mug down. I know, he said as his heart tore itself apart. I know. I'm just going to close my eyes for a minute. You don't mind, do you? Don shook his head and scooted closer to her on the couch. She closed her eyes and he took her fragile hand in his, giving it a gentle squeeze. She'd spent all those years playing matchmaker, keeping everyone's hopes and dreams alive and well, but never found someone for herself. I should have told her. I should have asked her to come in or taken her to lunch. Ruthetta wheezed, bringing Don's attention back to her. Shoving down his regrets and fears, he guided Ruthetta's head to his shoulder. He wasn't very well read, but he knew enough sad tales to know how hers would end. Thank you, Don, she whispered as her breathing slowed. Thank you. Don's heart fluttered with hope as the torn pieces slowly came back together. Maybe Ruthetta didn't need the fairy creatures after all. Maybe she just needed love. Taking a deep breath, he leaned down and kissed her forehead. Not once, but twice. Just so there'd be no mistaking his act, so she'd know. This here wasn't perfect, and it wasn't all it could have been, but maybe it was enough, because sometime enough is the best one can do. He was too late to save her from death, but he would make sure she wouldn't be forgotten. She was safe in his heart and his mind. She was loved.
You've been listening to Science Fiction Shorts on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm Kurt Benrood. My team of volunteer readers and I thank you for listening in, and we would love to have you join us next time. Just a quick reminder, this program is available in podcast, and it is intended for an audience that is blind or print impaired. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call. As always, our number is 832-5138, and that's 919-832-5138. If you're a fan of sci-fi and have something to say, we want to hear from you.